This sermon is going to be a series of sermons on Jewish communism and Bolshevism. They're the same thing, and the reason that this is of interest to Satanists is because Christianity is Jewish communism and Bolshevism. They are the same exact program. There isn't any difference between them other than one it comes in as a political face and the other one comes trying to say they're a religion. And they're both the same identical thing. They have the same identical procedures of what they do. Christianity is a stepping off point, a preparation to receive the slave labor of Bolshevism. And I'm going to tell you something straight up. I have studied and I have researched in depth for many, many years now under the guidance of Satan. And if Christians argue and stuff, they're God, so-called, what they call God and the devil are backwards. And that's why some of this backwards deals that the Christians twist and pervert and distort, so Satanism, everything backwards, like in lyrics and all that stuff, it's just senseless nonsense. But the truth is, what they call God and what they call the devil are backwards. Jehovah, the one called Jehovah of the Old Testament, is the real devil. Okay, and I don't mean to say devil actually comes from a word Davy from the Far East. And I go into exposingchristianity.com. You can type it in. It explains everything in detail. The Bible with the numbers in it, it's a book of Jewish witchcraft that they use to enslave the world. All of these Jewish programs. And we have already exposed Christianity and we are now working to expose its twin, Bolshevism and communism. And it is not just Russia and the so-called Iron Curtain. It's got the same procedures that they have, mass murder, torture, and slavery. They push everyone into slavery, and this is in the Talmud. And the Jews will lie, and they will say the protocols of the learned elders of Zion and the Talmud, and that, you know, the quotes from the Talmud are false. This is not true. They are prolific liars. Just like Christianity, they say it's these programs suck people in through ignorance. And ignorance is not stupidity necessarily, it's just not knowing. It's through lack of knowledge. And they get people to come in, like they say Christianity, oh, we've done so much for the poor and all this. Well, one modus operandi of the Jews is the Jews invent the problem. They create the problem and they promote the problem and then they come in with the solution. And Christianity, for I don't know, ever since its inception, has indoctrinated people subliminally and also, I mean, blatantly in the Bible that owning material possessions and having things that, you know, wealth or whatever is a sin or it's wrong and it's a virtue to be poor. And people going into these churches, sitting there, nodding off under the boring preachers of the sermons, they know what they're doing. These preachers up there preaching the most boring crap that you could listen to and just wasting your time in there. There's nothing spiritual about it. And while these people are nodding off in there because they're tired, and a lot of them, you know, compulsory church, a lot of us have been subjected to this garbage, sit there and they're taking it in, and while they're logical, conscious mind is not fully awake, the subconscious is just taking it in, and that's why a lot of people have money problems. And then Christianity creates the poverty problem, and then they come in and they supposedly, you know, have a solution to it, which isn't true. Only 10% of donations to Christian charities go to the victims, and this is the truth. Years ago, when I was at the university, there was a college professor I'll never forget, and he was really interesting. And he remarked, he had like a sabbatical or, you know, where he went to study in Russia. And this was back in the 1980s, around early 80s, where it was still the USSR. They were under communist control. And he went over there, and he could not... He was like astounded at how friendly the Russian people were and how hospitable they were. I mean, one woman, he was touched. He said that she shared her vodka with him. And he couldn't understand how they wanted to live under Bolshevism. And a lot of people don't know anything about Bolshevism. It is a Jewish program and it is a twin of Christianity. There are no differences. And when the Jews cannot get you with Christianity, then they push Bolshevism. It's back and forth. Like the Bolshevism fails, Another, I know I'm skipping around here a little bit. I'm not the best speaker, but I'm going to be reading some things here to enlighten people. And this is very, very serious because they're trying to establish this garbage in America. And every time they do, you can bet your sweet ass you're going to be dead, your family's going to be dead, and most people you know are going to be dead under the most heinous conditions imaginable if these communist Bolsheviks take over America here. And America, the United States of America right now, is the last free, so-called free, okay, major power of the world. And they've been working at it for I don't know how long to try to bring it down under the communist yoke. They're the ones that want to take over the entire world, the Jews. And anybody that knows the Jews knows their greed. But I want to mention something. I used to work out in the gym all the time, and there was a woman, this one was a small gym, and there was a woman who was working out there, and we'd talk to each other sometimes, you know, in between sets and stuff, weightlifting. And she was a Mormon. And back at this time, this is the early 90s, okay, after the fall of the Iron Curtain and the USSR came down under Gorbachev. Well, anyway, she told me, I was an atheist at the time, but she was told me that her parents were over now in the USSR as missionaries promoting the Christian doctrines, Mormonism, you know, the Christian plague over there. And it's like, as soon as like communism falls or something, or that fails, the Jews have another backup program right away. And there are no conflicts. By the way, Jesus Christ never existed. That is another Jewish invention. The reason they can't find anything on him is because he was never there. And a lot of stuff they invent. And another thing I want to interject here, okay, there's a website, if you go to Satan's Library on the web, it's located, if you can, you can find it on the JOS website under the Black Sun, under links, Satan's Library. And we have a lot of PDFs on there and things that explain the truth, you know, trying to enlighten people. I know a lot of people, are listeners, okay, they don't really care to sit down and read books. I've read probably 10,000 books in my life, cover to cover. You have to research certain things. But if you go to the Real Holocaust PDF on there, or the Real Holocaust website that, you know, is linked, you will find that the Holocaust that they call the Jewish Holocaust, that never happened. It's mathematically impossible, for one, the methods, and this has been proven on the internet, and they try to take it down all the time. It's gained them all kinds, that's how they got their state of Israel and kicked the Palestinians out, just kicked them out, took their land and relegated them to living in tents, which is, that's in the Jewish Talmud, that they own everything in the world, and the Gentiles are just dog slaves for them. And they have been using this Holocaust in a lot of ways, which is typical of a Jew. They're opportunists in the most abusive, heinous ways, to cover for the real heinous horrors against humanity committed by the communists. You get into studying about communism and researching communism, you will find that the true concentration camps, famine, and the most slave labor is Jewish communism. And if the truth be known, okay, I'm not going to get into this. This is on the Real Holocaust website. They've been using that as a cover and a distraction for the real slave labor. Of course, they're always promoting Bolshevism. When I was in school, like in the fourth grade, I'll never forget, there was a teacher, and this is back in the early 70s, and she told the class, you know, innocently, I guess she was over at the university, you know, studying and that, and she told the class innocently, she said, communism, a lot of people are against it, but it's just a way people want to live. That isn't true. It is a way people are forced to live, and whether they like it or not. And there are so many stories, the Berlin Wall and everything, about how people have risked their lives, their very lives. They've given up all their material possessions with just a shirt on their back to get away from that plague. Every week when I was growing up, and you know, through when I was a teenager and that, I grew up in the 1970s, and back then there was no such things as computers or iPads or internet, not even DVD players or VHS players, okay? Back in those days, there was like four or five channels, It was like a radio, an old radio, and you turn your TV on, you pull a knob, there's no digital anything, and you'd get four or five channels, and you either watched what was on or you didn't watch anything. But during this time, there was just about every week, there was something about that Jewish phony Holocaust that was on every single week, indoctrinating the public. One was Holocaust. It was, I think, a six-part series or something about, you know, these Jewish victims, old big bad Nazis, Auschwitz. You know, how many people know about Auschwitz? Practically the world, okay? But how many people know about Siberian slave labor under the Jews, what Gentiles went through? And most of them did not live to tell, and there's not prolific pictures of it. And I'm also finding in my research on Russian slave labor, okay, there's Cambodia, they took over different countries and that, and I mean, each one, I'm going to go into it, China, Red China's another one, it'd make your hair stand, and then what they did to people. Most of them never lived to tell. But a lot of these photos of these skeletons piled up are from Russian Siberian slave labor camps, and the Jews take pictures, and they twist it, and they say it's their own. But it's not true. I'm running across certain photos that I remember. I've done a lot of research in my life, and the thing is, a sad thing is, a person has to do tons of research to get to the truth. What Jewish communism is it is a slave labor state. Upper party bosses, you know, that belong to the Communist Party, most of whom are Jewish, and if they're not Jewish, they're married to Jews, they get special privileges, and that sort of thing, live a lot better than the average Gentile over there. And the average Gentile just lives horribly. Even these days, under Stalin, there were millions murdered. And I'm talking there were false arrests, and in order to get a quota of slave labor, they would go around to people and just accuse them of just about anything, Russian citizens, the average Russian citizen, haul them off to the prison where they were tortured into giving a confession. I'm going to read some excerpts from some books, and this is very, very serious, and I strongly encourage everyone who listens to this and is able to get the word out in some way, because we're all in danger here, and I know a lot of people can't see it. They're programmed by the television set and the YouTube. The Jews run 96% of Hollywood. Things like this are very rarely seen in movies. They keep it down. But that Holocaust, like I said, is aired on television just every week. This book is called The Gulag Archipelago, 1918 to 1956, by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And he survived the Gulag, and he lived to write about it and get the word out. And he risked his life, I don't know how many times, trying to get the word out about what was really going on in the Soviet Union. And sadly, he was duped into turning to Christianity, like so many people. The Jew plays both sides. They pretend enemies, both opposing sides, and it claimed to be enemies of each other, and it's actually the Jews controlling the same program. And I don't know how many times Christianity is always whining about how communism is of the devil, and all, you know, meaning Satan, when they say it, and all this garbage. And they say, oh, well, you know, they're not allowed to worship, and that's a lie. That's not true. Their churches are still open over there. But yeah, there's been priests that are arrested and stuff, but they make a big deal out of it. You know, like the average Gentile person doesn't even matter what happens to them. Or if it's a Jew that's arrested, and yeah, there were. It's like you never hear the end of it. But they're playing both sides and towards the same thing. And he turned towards Christianity in the end, which is really sad, because it's like they're fighting they go from one to the other, and it's like you're disarmed, because it's like they're both Jewish programs, and unless you get them together and destroy them together is what Satan wants. That's why he wants me to do this sermon here and educate our people. Unless you destroy Christianity and communism, you know, the Jewish Bolshevism together, it's like you're going to keep fighting this. It's never going to stop until it kills you. It says here in his book, arrest. Need it be said that that is the breaking point in your life? A bolt of lightning which has scored a direct hit on you? That is an unassimilable spiritual earthquake not every person can cope with, as a result of which people often slip into insanity. The universe has many different centers, as there are living beings in it. Each of us is a center of the universe, and that universe is shattered when they hiss at you. You are under arrest. If you are arrested, can anything else remain unshattered by this cataclysm? But the darkened mind is incapable of embracing these displacements in our universe, and both the most sophisticated and veriest simpleton among us, drawing on all life's experiences, can only gasp out, "Me? What for?" And this is a question which, through repeated millions and millions of times before, has yet to receive an answer. Arrest is an instantaneous shattering thrust, expulsion, somersault from one state into another. And everything that is now compromised by the traditional, even literary, image of an arrest will pile up and take shape, not in your own disordered memory, but in what your family and your neighbors in your apartment remember. The sharp nighttime ring or rude knock at the door, the insolent entrance of the unwiped jackboots of the unsleeping state security operatives, the NKVD. Okay, that was the preceptor of the Jewish KGB. And they used these same tactics in the Christian Inquisition. You were guilty no matter what, and they even prosecuted your descendants. It's like you had no rights whatsoever. The frightened and cowed civilian witness at their backs. And what function does this civilian witness serve? The victim doesn't even dare think about it, and the operatives don't remember, but that's what the regulations call for, and so he has to sit there all night long and sign in the morning. For the witness, jerked from his bed, it is torture to go out night after night to help arrest his own neighbors and acquaintances. This traditional image of arrest is also trembling hands packing for the victim. A change of underwear, a piece of soap, something to eat, and no one knows what is needed, what is permitted, what clothes are best to wear, and the security agents keep interrupting and hurrying you. You don't need anything. They'll feed you there. It's warm there. It's all lies. They keep hurrying you to frighten you. The traditional image of arrest is also what happens afterward when the poor victim has been taken away. It is an alien, brutal, and crushing force totally dominating the apartment for hours on end. A breaking, ripping open, pulling from the walls, emptying things out from wardrobes and desks onto the floor, shaking, dumping out, and ripping apart, piling up mountains of litter on the floor, and the crunch of things being trampled beneath jackboots. And nothing is sacred in a search. During the arrest of the locomotive engineer, Enoshin, a tiny coffin stood in his room containing the body of his newly dead child. The jurists, in quotation marks, unquote, dumped the child's body out of the coffin and searched it. They shake sick people out of their sick beds and they unwind bandages to search beneath them. For those left behind after the arrest, there is a long tail end of a wrecked and devastated life, and the attempts to go and deliver food parcels. But from all the windows, the answer comes in barking voices. Nobody here by that name. Never heard of them. Yes, and in the worst days in Leningrad, it took 5 days of standing in crowded lines just to get to that window. And it may be only after half a year or year that the arrested person responds at all. Or else the answer is tossed out, deprived of the right to correspond. And that means once and for all, no right to correspondence. And that almost for certain means has been shot. Now, getting back, I'm interrupting here. From the book, I'm reading excerpts. These people were taken to the main Soviet prison in Moscow, most of them, I mean, that were Muscovites, to the Lubyanka. That was where they were held. And there was no heat in any of the cells. And we're talking Russian winters here. We're not talking like, you know, Midwestern United States or moderate climate of Europe. I'm talking the most brutal cold you can imagine. I know, because I'm from the northern United States, and I know how cold it can get. And these people weren't even given any heat in their cells. And they were, just like with the Inquisition. And the Pravda newspaper, which is the main communist newspaper, it's very common in the Soviet Union, stated I have a quote, and if you look up therealholocaust.com, and it's also on Exposing Christianity, I put on several articles there that Christianity is the mother of Bolshevism. And the same exact torture tactics, only a little bit more variation here, same procedure, happened in the Christian Inquisition. Now, getting back to reading this, what they did when they took the prisoner there is they forced them into a confession of something. I mean, just ludicrous crap that they didn't. They just an innocent person that they picked up, busted down the door of their home, whatever, made them sign a confession, beat them and tortured them, starved them, froze them. Put them in the most bug-infested boxes. I mean, just extreme torture until the person broke down and confessed or died. A lot of them died. It says, let us try to list some of the simplest methods which break the will and the character of the prisoner without leaving marks on his body. Let us begin with the psychological methods. These methods have been enormous and even annihilating impact on rabbits. I know he's being slang, but in meaning innocents. Who have never been prepared for prison suffering. And it isn't even easy for a person who holds the strongest convictions. 1. First of all, night. Why is it all the main work of breaking down human souls went on at night? Why, from the very earliest years, did the organs select the night? The organs is, he's using another word here, it means the system, the Soviet system, the organs. Because at night the prisoner is torn from sleep, and even though he has not yet been tortured by sleeplessness, lacks his normal daytime equanimity and common sense, he is most vulnerable. 2. Persuasion. In a sincere tone and the very simplest method, why play at cat and mouse, so to speak? After all, having spent some time among others undergoing interrogation, the prisoner has come to see what the situation is. And so the interrogator says to him in a lazily friendly way, look, you're going to get a prison term, whatever happens. If you resist, you'll croak, meaning die, right here in prison, and you'll lose your health. But if you go on to camp, you'll have fresh air and sunlight. So why not sign now? Very logical. And for those who agree and sign and are smart, if the matter concerns only themselves. But that's rarely so. A struggle is inevitable. And I also want to interject something here. Else, most of these interrogators, and it's the same with the Inquisition, are Jewish. Another variant of persuasion is particularly appropriate to the party member. If there are shortages and even famine in the country, then you as a Bolshevik have to make up your mind. Can you admit that the whole party is to blame? Or the whole Soviet government? No, of course not. The director of the Flax Depot hastened to reply. Then be brave and shoulder the blame yourself, and he did. And another thing I want to interject is this communist Jewish psychology where they blame the victim for everything. It's like you're having problems that you never even had anything to do with, like surviving, and the Jew makes it impossible to survive. It's like the more control they have, you're going to be dead. They get you so indebted and you can't pay, the jobs are low pay, the whole five yards, and then no matter what you owe, you, these are choices you make. I don't know how many times I've heard this garbage before, and it's designed to instill depression and suicide in the victim. You're responsible for that. Well, you know, maybe there's a limited number of choices the average person is able to make. A limited number. But you cannot control the results. But the Jew tries to tell you that you can. And this is very, very common in Jewish psychiatry. And these stupid idiots that blame the victim for the problems that the victim has. In other words, the victim's to blame. The Jew is not. The system isn't to blame. You know, what you've been subjected to in life isn't to blame. Life certainly isn't to blame. The whole blame is on you. And that's what they do. And they break people down that way. And they also, it also causes self-hatred, self-blame, self-loathing, low self-esteem. It's no different from the Christian concept that you're born in original sin, so you're damned. And the only way out is through being saved. And that's a joke. That's a total lie. And I've gone into a lot of detail that I'm not going to spend this audio sermon on that. You just check exposingchristianity.com for that one. But here's another one. 4. Psychological contrast was sometimes effective. Sudden reversals of tone, for example, Or fool, okay, it goes on and it says, fool you, rat, I'll put 9 grams of lead in your skull. And he would advance on the accused, clutching his hands outstretched as if to grab by the hair, fingernails like needles. This worked very, very well with women prisoners. And they would get family members to sign confessions against, like, their brother, their sister, their mother, their father, other relatives. And this is no different from the Judeo-Christian Bible, when that Nazarene, which is a fictitious entity, that Jesus the Christ, for those of you, I call it the Nazarene because you spit on the damn thing, says, I will turn family members against family members, brother against brother, sister against sister, father against son, daughter against mother, etc. Members of his own household will be enemies against him. And it's in the New Testament. And this is no different what they do in the communism. I'm going to be wrapping this up here, and I'm going to start on another sermon here because this is getting to be too long. It's already 25 minutes. I'm ending this right now because it's 25 minutes long. You can go to sermon 2, and I'll take up from there. I don't want to have these sermons too long. Hail Satan.